because it's a nice place and to give this talk. Today I'll try to talk about the spectral networks with spin and their relation to wild BPS spectra. I'll define all these terms. There seems to be confusing, and this talk is based mostly on this, to my works with Pietro Longhi, Gregory Moore, Tom Maniero, and Renitsky. This is one of the talks. And first of all, why are we so interested in BPS spectrum, or well, Bogomolnyi-Prasad-Sommerfeld spectra state? There is a sort of twofold reason. First of all, they appear as effective degrees of freedom in low energy dynamics of quantum field theory. Usually, well, and so one widely known example is this Polyakov monopole solution, for example. And second reason is that in theories with supersymmetries like n equals 2 four-dimensional Cp-Riang-Neel theory, we can calculate the parameters of this states exactly beyond perturbation theory. So let me start with a brief review, very brief review of n equals 2 supersymmetry algebra in four dimensions. It's given by supercharges that are have the following anti-commutation relations. This is a centrally extended algebra. The central extension is characterized by a central charge complex parameter. And in the presence of topological non-trivial field configurations, it is non-zero. And in low energy, in a low energy limit, we expect that our theory undergoes a symmetry breaking, so our due to the usual Higgs mechanism, and our gauge group is broken to a product of U1 factors, and our fields are charged with respect to these factors electrically and magnetically, and we can divide our states into different charge sector labeled by a collection of integer numbers and I and the by. And the central charge in this sector is given by the following formula, where AI and AI dual are expectation values of the Higgs field from vector multiplet, and dual are correspondingly in the dual picture, and these quantities can be exactly calculated in the Zybek-Witten theory, well known. And BPS states are special because they, and the supersymmetry algebra implies that the masses of the states in certain charge sector is greater or equal than absolute value of the central charge. And BPS states are such states that saturate this BPS bound. Another important quantity is argument of the central charge. It actually labels that half of this supersymmetry that that preserve this state. So our BPS states break half of supersymmetries, and then another half they are preserving. And I'll usually refer this as a phase of the BPS state. Well, and we'd like to concentrate on spin content of this BPS state. So we need the following quantity called protected spin character, or also sometimes refined BPS index. But actually, in literature, usually refined means that there are actually more refinements. Here we just add one parameter, fugacity y. And this is this quantity, omega, and it's defined by just the trace over a certain charge sector of this operator. And it has the following properties, that for long representation that can be expanded as a product of three factors, they are they are identically zeros. And for short representations that are RBPS states, so they are annihilated by a half of superchargers, they give by the simplified formula. So for example, for our usual hypermultiplets, it's just one, and for vector multiplets, they are sort of quantum two. And this is important that this quantity also depends on U. That is a point on the Coulomb branch of our theory. Actually, it turns out that BPS, our BPS states can be either stable or unstable, depending on where we are on the Coulomb branch. Actually, our modular space, our Coulomb branch, is sort of cut in a set of chambers where these quantities are constant. And they jump discontinuously across the boundaries of these chambers. And this phenomenon is well known as it's called wall crossing phenomenon. And these boundaries of chambers are called walls of marginal stability. So actually, these particular spin characters are going to be our main sort of output. So actually, these are those quantities we would like to calculate. And there are many different approaches to this problem. They're well known in the literature. For example, there is an effective one-dimensional supersymmetric matrix quantum mechanics. Also, these BPS states can be studied in regarding geometry of Calabi-Yau threefolds, and this gives another approach to calculation of those quantities known as Kotzevich subnormal crossing formulas. Also they have quite similar dynamics to BPS extremal black holes in supergravity. But we follow the fourth method, highlighted in a sequence of works by Gaeta, Moore, and Naitsky. And to do this, we sort of add to our Super-Young-Mills theory a probe that is surface defect. So surface defects are also breaking half of supersymmetries. So they are parameterized by some phase complex data. And they are also parameterized by a set of parameters, so kind of electric parameters that are effectively two-dimensional theta angles, and magnetic parameters that are alpha that describe how our vector field behaves in the neighborhood of our defect. And alpha defy is an angle in the plane perpendicular to the defect. And this is kind of a generalized version of a world surface for a Dirac string. And moreover, we'd like to consider so-called interfaces when we glue together two surface defects through a line defect. And in principle, we can choose different vacua on the left and right hand side. So physically, it looks like some source of dionic charge with some generalized Dirac string attached to it. Touching it. And there are two advantages of this consideration. One, the first one, is that these defects start to interact with our four-dimensional BPS states. And through this interaction, we can sort of recover actually BPS degeneracy, BPS spin characters of four-dimensional states. The second one is that effectively on this two-dimensional world sheet of our defect, we expect some effective two-dimensional supersymmetric theory. And due to works of Chakotay and Waffle, for example, we know that the partition function of this effective theory should satisfy certain differential equations, well-known DT-star equations. Well, I'll not dig very deep into this part, Moreover, I wouldn't need actually very explicit form of these equations. Instead, let me give you a kind of a taste what they should look like. Instead, we can appeal to well-known Aldeigo-Tuchikawa relation between four-dimensional theories of class S and two-dimensional conformal field theories. And this equation should be translated in some differential equations and conformal field theory. So, for example, in the Liouville theory, this should be equation for null vector equation for correlator with the insertion of a degenerate field. In principle, you can also you can think that we are trying to solve sort of this equation, number 9 or Knijing-Zamolodchikov equation and Wiedemann model. So what we are going to do, we are going to study their asymptotic behavior, because our philosophy implies that this asymptotic behavior should represent an infrared expansion of our observables. And unless this, for example, these terms would be some if these terms wouldn't be operators, but rather some just functions, this would be a standard problem from, I don't know, some undergraduate course in quantum mechanics. But in principle, due to presence of this differential operator, well, this not differential, generic operators, we should slightly refine our technique, and this refinement would give us this actually desired information about spins of our BPS states. So in principle, we would like to find an asymptotic expansion for some kind of this equation. For a while, let us forget about it, that A is some non-trivial operator, and what would we do? We would substitute an asymptotic expansion in this form, and in the limit of some this parameter, I put it in quotes, because actually this parameter depends on what theory you are considering, but there is always a parameter controlling our expansion.
What was psi physically in terms of the surface operator?
It's a partition function.
On what geometry?
So on the surface operator. So you I mean this one. You put some vacuum on the sides and calculate it. Yeah.
This partition. The 2D partition function.
Well, actually, it's 2D, 4D, because 4D is present. How is it present? It is present in the following way. First of all, asymptotically, instead of a differential equation, we get an algebraic one for dW. And we know what this equation should be. This equation should be a Zyber-Quitron curve. This is how our four-dimensional theory comes into the game. For example, if I consider the theory of n equals 2 four-dimensional vector multiplet with just it with gauge group SU3, this spectral curve for Zyber-Quitron curve is given by the following equation, and Zyber-Quitron differential is just xdz. So naively, we expect that our partition function, or in this case, it's kind of a wave function actually, or as a solution of our differential equation, should have something like diagonal form. Well, this is surely not true, because again, there is sort of twofold reasoning. On one hand, we sort of have some non-trivial bundle over our ultraviolet curve. where our spectral parameter z lives. And this non-trivial bundle cannot be just trivialized everywhere. We can trivialize it in separate charts, actually what we are going to do, but, well, not globally. On the other hand, from the point of view of differential equation, when we start to solve it, we encounter so-called Stokes phenomenon. And the Stokes phenomenon predicts that there are higher order corrections to off diagonal elements. And actually, we are good. In principle, this correction can be interpreted as a contributions of solitons that arise in our effective two-dimensional theory. So, where are we heading to? So suppose we somehow solve our equations differential. The monotonies of connections of on the parameter space actually should give us expectation values of line operators, and we expect that our asymptotic analysis give us expansion of the following kind, where this y are going to be infrared operators, and omegas are so-called frame BPS spin characters, and actually they can be calculated analogously to the usual Stokes parameters in the theory of differential equations. And I'll actually tell how to calculate them, but before going there, let me mention the following things. First of all, when we turn on our fugacity y for the spin in this system, we expect that this algebra of these operators is a non-commutative algebra. Actually, this simple Heisenberg algebra. The reason why that is not very obvious. Loosely speaking, it follows from that fact that a dionic part of particles create electromagnetic field with a certain spin. Spin in this case given by the direct pairing of their dionic charges, and this is direct pairing dionic charges. So we get this, loosely speaking, we get this factor. Well, to derive this precisely, well, it requires some more thoughts and let me know.
These are bulk line defects or line defects stuck to the surface
operator? These are actually just line defects, and also this algebra includes, should include the operators that correspond to just four-dimensional BPS states floating around. Sorry.
Are these going to affect the wave function of the surface operator?
And we actually we know in what way. In principle, how it looks like. We have some dionic core sitting on this two-dimensional defect, and there are some floating around our BPS states. These BPS states can be bound to our core, forming some kind of cloud or halo, then this bounded state can be again preserve that half of supersymmetries. This is a bound state, and it modifies the expectation value of our just core charge in the following way by this factor. This factor is just a wave, sort of a wave functions of Landau levels that arise around our core. How to see this? Can be seen from this product over k. An absolute value of so in principle we can think of this in the following way. Suppose in the core we have just a monopole, and we try to bound to them just electrons. Then the Dirac pairing is just a charge of our monopole core. Then the flux, magnetic flux, through a sphere is just this Dirac pairing. And the number of Landau levels on this on a sphere with subjected to a flux of magnetic fields equals to this flux actually. And this is exactly this contribution of these Landau levels. And each Landau level actually, this Landau levels picture actually form a nice representation of the of our I mean this SO3 little group of spins. So it has just has nice spin representation, and this is this product over k, and the product over m comes from the fact that this Hall particles can have their own spin. And presumably this is just this formula. So what are we going to do? So I'll tell you how to calculate these quantities. And then we are going to change parameters of our interface. As we change the parameters, some BPS states are bound or unbound to this interface. This changes this asymptotic expansion, and it changes in some way that is compatible with this change of variables. If it is, we can calculate these powers, AM, that are three parameters, and then they can be combined into this quantity that is exactly this spin character of the particle that is lost or bound to our defect. Right. So. Why this asymptotic expansion actually changes? It changes because the geometry of Stokes lines also can change discontinuously. Stokes lines are defined by this equation. Here dWij is a difference of our Zyber-Kvitton differential on ith sheet or in jth sheet, or you can think of that our Zyber-Kvitton curve is a multiple cover of the ultraviolet curve, and I mean this is higher order algebraic equation. It has several roots, so we can think of ijs as indices of these roots. So substitute them and take the difference, and this equation presumably says that this difference of differentials along a vector tangent to our Stokes line has to have this constant phase, and this phase zeta is exactly that phase of interface. So We change the phase of interface. We change this parameter of the zeta, and actually we change the solution to this equation. And here I have drawn these lines, the dashed lines, these Stokes lines. We start to draw them from the branching points of our cover. And they go from branching points to some singularities if there are. Changing this phase, my Stokes lines start to rotate, and eventually they collide into this sort of critical picture. And then they change their topology. And if I draw associated triangulation of my ultraviolet curve, I get actually a flip of triangulation. And if I calculate symplectic expansion, symplectic expansion of my path exponent along this blue line, on the left for the left picture and for the right picture, the result will be different, and they exactly differ by that kind of a factor of Hallow factor. And we say that this picture, this sort of critical picture, corresponds to actually this Hallow factor that gives us a hypermultiplet. So we say that if we can encounter this sort of critical graph of Stokes lines, we say that in the theory we have in the four-dimensional theory we have a hypermultiplet present. Actually, we can calculate its phase, its central charge through this picture. It's just an integral of the Zeibert-Witten differential along this cycle. As you see, Stokes lines are labeled by a couple of indices that are roots of my spectral cover equation, or actually sheets of my cover, if I order my sheets locally somehow. Stokes lines of different types can start to intersect and create new ones from the junctions, or vice versa, annihilate. And generically, this might be pretty complicated picture, so it's why it's called networks, I believe. I think so. And since this is networks related to spectral covers, this is why they're spectral networks. And before going into sort of calculation details, let me tell. First, what peculiar behavior of BPS states we should expect in this picture? It's quite useful to denote BPS states by quivers, quiver diagrams, and this actually refers to this. This actually labels the matter content of this one effective one-dimensional matrix quantum, supersymmetric quantum matrix quantum mechanics. In principle, you can think of this as a collection of elementary BPS particles of M elementary BPS particles of type 1 and N BPS particles of type 2. And the Dirac pairing between their dynamic charges is P. And this is picture for this. And wall crossing in this system is pretty simple. Not pretty simple. Each elementary particle has its own phase, and depending on there are two phases, and if they ordered in one way, you either get all the bound states if they are ordered in the opposite way. The stable BPS states are just this elementary particle. If you draw central charges of bound states on a complex plane, you get this nice picture. So the edges edge vectors in this picture are just correspond to the central charges of this elementary state, elementary BPS particles corresponding to nodes of this quiver. And they start to accumulate towards the center. So these black lines are just hypermultiplets. Well, all of them actually, all the black vectors are hypermultiplets. And the center, we have a dense cone of states. And particles in this dense cone actually are particles of higher spin. So they are not vector multiplets or higher multiplets. In the simple case where P equals 2, well, actually, we have a cone, dense cone for P greater or equal to 3. In the case P equals 2, this cone just shrink to just one vector multiplet. And this would be a classical picture in the weak coupling regime of pure SC2 Super-Young's theory, where this would be the supersymmetric version of W boson. And peculiarity of this higher spin states is that their index, this is a protective spin character, if I substitute my fugacity y equals to 1, grows exponentially. And on the first glance, it's sort of contradictory. And well, sometimes people start to refer that we have some stringy contributions, because naturally you shouldn't get this growth in quantum field theory. Because since you expect a symplectic freedom, the growth of this index, so that is assigned sum over states, should be bounded above by just a sum over states. That is exponent of the entropy. And entropy of the free gas we can calculate just by dimensional analysis. And surely this growth is much, this quantity grows much faster than this one in any dimensions, in any dimension actually. And this paradox sort of resolved by the fact that this BPS, the size of our BPS states also grows with the energy. Actually, near the wall of marginal stability, they are sort of fractioned into kind of BPS molecules. And so you can think of actually wall crossing phenomena as this molecular states start to dissolve or recombine, vice versa. Their size grows also. Yeah, with energy, and after some time, they do not fit in the box of volume D. So, if you actually substitute here proper scaling of the volume of the states with energy, you get a revised bound. That is okay. Another. Another interesting feature of this BPS state, actually, this is why they are called wild, due to this exponential growth. Another interesting feature of this BPS state is actually now related to the protective spin characters. I can sort of expand my protective spin characters in a sum of characters of representations of SL2 of spin J.
I should fix the slope.
Yeah. You fix the slope and then but you multiply it by some real coefficient. Yeah. I think that could be very large.
Yeah, and then go across exponential.
Great.
So I take my spin character and expand it into a sum of characters of just SL2 for example, starting from maximal spin to end, going lower, lower, and lower, and these are just coefficients. This expansion corresponding to maximal spin, then second to maximum, and so on and so forth. And as I then I can draw this table, and I see that there is a sequence of these numbers, and it starts to stabilize as the charge grows.
What is the intersection of the gamma 1 and gamma 2?
Sorry?
What is the intersection of gamma 1 and gamma 2 in the table?
P.
So it's independent of the P, that sequence?
Sequence depends, but the stabilized sequence doesn't. So you can this is actually table for p equals 3, but if you consider analogous tables for different p's, you see that the sequence toward this sequence this stabilized sequence is the same. Actually, it it has a relation to the behavior of moduli space of queer representations, and actually, in principle, well, after you modify this function a little bit, it is going to be a Poincaré polynomial of classifying space GL and GL. Well, some classifying space. I don't remember which exactly.
What are you converging to?
Sorry?
How do I know where to go down the table? What charge are you trying?
You can fix a slope and start to put this table.
You're approaching that slope through rational values?
Well, yeah. In principle,
Yeah. Sorry, I'm asking a really stupid basic question. How do you continue the table? What's the pattern?
Actually, it doesn't matter. Put vectors of put longer and longer and longer vectors. So in principle you can fix some complete slope, for example this vertical one, and start to put this vector. You will see this pattern. So like 4, 4, 7, 7, 8, 8, 9, 9, 10, 10, and so on. Generic function for these numbers actually is this one. You can find it online encyclopedia on integer sequences, and after some modification, actually, but I think you should multiply it by something y minus or divide y minus zeta. It's actually counting three-dimensional partitions of height less or equal than 2. And this is two nice phenomena that we are going actually to reveal in our setup, now in our approach. So, what do we do? We have some ultraviolet curve C, parameterized by this spectral parameter Z. Then we have a Zabrakwiesen curve that is covered some n-fold cover of my UV curve, and on this curve I have some non-abelian flat connection, and I'd like to rewrite it in terms of sort of abelian flat connection on the curve sigma. And let me do this in a pretty abstract way. Instead of these phases, I'd use variables curly y, and instead of this variable, I'd use this go to q. So what in these terms, we can construct sort of a path algebra. What quantities, what properties should it satisfy? The first one is that you expect that your parallel transport along this, along some line with this connection should be flat. So for two regular homotic paths lying on sigma, this variable should be equal. The second rule is concatenation rule. So if I first transport something along path B, then along path A, and if this path are concatenable, then I this is the same as I transport along concatenation of paths A and B, and there are no more a priori rules for this algebra. So now we would construct from this parallel transports sort of abelian parallel transports on the cover parallel transport on the base curve C. According to the rules, first of all, my Stokes lines or double Kibbe lines, two names of the same thing, cut my ultraviolet curve in a collection of patches or charts. And in one, in each chart, I can sort of diagonalize my trivialize my connection or sort of diagonalize the matrix. And in this single chart, my parallel transport is just given by a sum over preimages of my path on C, and preimages lie on sigma. This is an analog of this diagonal formula, actually, nothing more. And across patches. Across patches separated by boundary double Kibbe line, this double Kibbe line, I regular my parallel transport with a regularing function. So I take this 1 plus y gamma and sandwich it with parallel transport in u minus and u plus. And this y gamma correspond to a path that starts on ith sheet. Here goes around the branching point and returns already on J's. And now we have to verify that that parallel transport on the UV curve constructed in this way is indeed flat. So we have to be sure that if I do not feel sort of branching points. So in the place where I glue three charts, so at the branching point, I should go in two ways. For example, along D and along this long way, A1, B1, C1, and get the same value. And this can be done if I add one more restriction. Well, not restriction, but condition. Yeah, this one. So if I have two paths that go, one of them is just going around the branching point, another one sort of circles around the branching point. But as you see, you can see that it starts and ends on the same sheet actually as this one. Then I should impose a condition that some of these variables, sort of abstract variables, should be zero in my algebra. Sort of a theorem says that if I have a parallel transport constructed according to these rules and my path algebra is subjected to this extra condition, that the parallel transport, this constructed parallel transport on the UV curve would be flat. Okay, and to go back to surface defect, we need the following projection, actually. projection row is a linear map. I just map my this abstract variables to this fugacity y with functional r, right? I'll tell what it is, and our old friends that are this Heisenberg algebra variables, and this brackets means homology class of A. The rise is assigned sum over self-intersection of my path A. So if I have some base point on my path and I start to go along it, I go through each self-intersection twice. And so let me denote, for example, the first time I go through the self-intersection as a straight line, and the second time as a cut line. So I have two types of self-intersections. I assign to each line and just sum over them with this weights. For example, for this path, it's the right is just -2, and the relation to our surface defects that is, well, actually line, it's better to say line defects, that is supposed to give our frame BPS spin characters is given by just the projection of the parallel transport along this path P. Well, let me a little bit motivate this choice. Why we have chosen right for this projection? The reason for this is sort of that the rise is a kind of, it's, well, not exactly, but a kind of quadratic refinement for intersection pairing of cycles on surfaces. So if I stick with this kind of a rule, I can simply go from my abstract algebra that is just y gamma time 2 gives me y gamma 1 gamma 2. If I substitute this projection, I recover my old Heisenberg algebra. And actually, reason how this thing works, I can consider two paths, gamma 1 and gamma 2. I've drawn here them as two clouds, purple and green. So suppose there are two strands of gamma 1 and gamma 2, well, lying nearby, and I intersect them by an auxiliary path chi and consider detours. So first I go along gamma 1, return to this same point, then go along chi naught and detour along gamma 2, return and end through chi plus. Then the rise of this complicated path is actually sum of the self-intersection of all these paths is a self-intersection of gamma 1, then plus self-intersection of gamma 2, and then intersections of gamma 1 and gamma 2 in somewhere in these points. And actually, since I go through gamma 1 first and then through gamma 2, this sum over mutual intersections give me exactly intersection pairing of cycles associated to this gamma 1 and gamma 2, of their homology classes. This is the reason, and we like to apply it to our case of that quiver. I forgot to say this is a Kronecker quiver, and we get sort of this spectral network. Actually, it's drawn up to, I think, generation 3, so in this this intersection should be more lines emanated and more intersection, more beautiful picture. It's actually a threefold cover of a cylinder, so I have singularities as I go up or down, and it has periodic boundary conditions from left to right. So this alpha 1 goes to this exactly alpha 1 to alpha 1 and continues. And this is actually a critical spectral network corresponding to a certain collection of four-dimensional BPS states, and, well, actually this finite this critical network is drawn in black here, and we do not need this color lines. And generically, for a quiver of this type, this critical network has the following form. So we have p blocks of this type. Each block is a collection of cells. And spectral networks depend on a phase. So we, by one network, we capture all the states with the same phase. So they may be multiples of the same charge vector. So in this case, we get all the multiples of m n charge vectors. Alpha is integer. Right. And in the case when, and we assume that m and n are coprime here. And in particular case when m equals n equals 1, we can actually calculate everything explicitly, all the rises, everything, and calculate BPS spin character in the following form. We can represent them in terms of a solution of this auxiliary functional equation. So having a solution of this equation, so it depends on P. It's functional because I should define this function that, well, here I should substitute this modification, this y fugacity. Having this solution, I can construct the generating function through this product, and then re-expand this product at in the following form. Then my new powers AM N would give me exactly BPS spin characters of my states. And from here are two examples. For example, the simplest one: if p equals one, this equation is not functional; it's just an algebraic equation. It can be solved explicitly, and it gives a Then I can create a generating function, and I see this is generating function of a halo vector multiplet flying around my defect. In a more complicated case, if p equals 3 or greater, I cannot solve this equation explicitly. I can solve it in terms of series and actually, recover this protected spin characters. And surely they coincide with other methods. As I said, there are consensus Lebesgue wall crossing formula, one-dimensional supersymmetric quantum mechanics, or consideration of supersymmetric BPS critical black holes due to Mann-Scott, Pulin, and Sen. And all of them coincide. Maybe I should say also that this coefficient is always one, actually. It is independent of P, and what it gives me my state that corresponds to the charge vector 1-1, that is bound state, say, of just one electron and one monopole, is always this simple analog of magnetic, not a hydrogen atom. It's just a bound state of electron and monopole, and it's a exactly solvable problem in simple terms. It's just Landau levels, and there are p Landau levels, lowest energy Landau levels, and this fact that this coefficient is one is exactly related to that fact. Maybe I have 5 minutes, and let me say maybe a couple of brief words about further directions of this study where we could try to head to. It's pretty obvious, right? We have introduced just one deformation corresponding to this parameter y, This was fugacity for spins in our picture, and is well known. There are more deformations. Well, it's known consideration of topological strings and other subjects, and it would be interesting how to generalize this framework to these other subjects. And one way, one interesting way is related to recent work of Gyota Murinaitsky, and where they performed a homological grading on a space of solitons. And well, I think I mentioned that Stokes extra corrections can be related to solitons, and in principle, we could try to lift those considerations, well, or descend that consideration to the spectral networks and try to find a homological find of spectral networks. And in principle, this equation is pretty suggestive. In this case, this one, right? This one. In that case, these parameters, instead of, well, this equation is pretty abstract, right? Why I started with this wise are just some abstract variables. And in principle, nothing prevents them from being complexes of states associated to the solitons, and this sum should be a direct sum of complexes, and equality should be quasi isomorphism of complexes to an empty set. And this implies that these two paths correspond to certain quasi-classical solutions of two-dimensional Landau-Ginzburg theory, and this can be done, and indeed we can find that the state that is associated to this path and to this path have different Fermi number, and there should be a supercharge that transforms one to another. And another interesting deformation. Oops, sorry. Another interesting deformation may, well, it's sort of tricky, because in principle, this we'd expect that is somehow related to five-dimensional Sibyang-Mills theory. The reason in the literature, recent literature, actually in works of Mina Ganagic, Shamil Shakirov, and others, there is indication that there might be some different deformation just homological grading. The reason for this is that the answers that you get in homological grading are sort of Poincaré polynomials, sort of all the for example, all these coefficients of polynomial coefficients of my spin characters are positive. There are certain dimensions of certain vector spaces, and in that approach, it's expected not to be necessarily positive. So it might be something different, and in principle, it would imply that we have to consider also so-called five dimension spectral curves and try to apply our spectral network technique to them, and in this case, actually, our our quantities like x and z are going to be promoted to exponents. So it's sort of S1, more S1 bundle over a spectral curve. Hopefully, the wiring of the spectral networks around this extra circle would give us this extra parameter T. Just a project, so let me stop here. Thank you.
Can you say anything about exact? I mean, does your approach allow us to say anything about the exact quantization of integrable systems? Because you know that this partition function with a defect solves this integrable system.
You see, in speckle, we try to go another way around. The thing is that what you would actually get naturally from this integrable system is this algebra. It's sort of a natural quantization of this Weyl-Peterson form on this on Teich-Müller space and so on and so forth. The thing is what we wanted to do is this algebra is for cycles, called cycles on the surface. And we sort of wanted to do something for open cycles. You see, the problem is that we didn't actually quantize open cycles. We used this projection map. So after projection map, these variables y curly do not satisfy this nice algebra. So in principle, what this allows you to get this sort of Stokes, redefined Stokes parameters, and expansion of, for example, if you start to consider holonomies of flux connection, this kind of quantum, it should be expanded as, maybe let me say it in different words. In principle, let me just stick with the Liouville theory, right? We are solving this equation, right? And what you'd like to do, this T is sort of your Lux connection. And what you like to do is find a pass exponent of something like 0, y, so 1 tz, 1, 0, 1 tz. And if you like, expand it to sum over this omega y gamma, where y gamma is e, so sort of b integral gamma jz dz, where jz is defined as, through the stress energy tensor plus Q z equals T. Well, it's actually defining this. This operator actually has branches and so on and so forth. And you can find that this commutator of these operators, C prime, actually is Bergman differential plus higher order corrections that are essential. Higher order corrections. So we can define that integral gamma jz commutator gamma prime jz g prime is intersection pairing of cycles. So for these operators, you naturally get this algebra with y equals e pi I b squared as you expect. In principle, I certainly hope that this method allows you to calculate these quantities as polynomials as functions of y. In principle, it's pretty, I don't know, it's pretty universal. So it doesn't depend what explicit lux connection you consider. Is it stress energy terms or something else? In principle, what you start with is a speckle curve. So.
Do you see why all your characters should be positive?
Sorry?
On your last slide, you had a bunch of expressions that were all positive signs.
Ah, positive signs. Yeah, it's a so-called no-exotics theorem. It's proven for certain cases in papers of Gaiotto, Deaconesco, and collaborators. And this null exotics theorem says that your BPS states that appear in this.
Yeah, but
I mean,
do you see from just these computations with RAI that things are going to come out with clustered or?
I don't know.
No, it's just a variable.
Well, it's sort of clear. I think it might be clear from this equation because you see you don't have here you have only powers that are multiples of 2. To have minus sign, well, it might. Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
Sorry.
No, just wondering the structure.
If you would have non powers that are not actually this exact again wouldn't be solved problems, so wouldn't solve problems.
Thanks.
Yes, so also the question is quite like not theory on this here of Fibonacci stuff. Can you study stable limits of the construction when you have M and N and then you send one of them to infinity?
You mean Grewers?
Yeah. Like
I think I mean it depends. I think it actually depends what you are describing with the quiver, but because in this case it's I think you mean slightly different. Well, quivers are always depicting right matter content of your theory.
Well, okay, we can talk.
For now, let's think deeper again.
Thank you.